Vayakom melech chadash al Mitzrayim, asher lo yada et Yosef. A new king arose over Egypt who did not know Joseph. Okay, so now we have a new pharaoh. The old pharaoh, did the old pharaoh and Joseph get along? Super great. Who was running Egypt?
Joseph.
Joseph. Do you think people knew Joseph? I think everybody knew Joseph because he was the guy that made a decision about whether, you know. So now a new king. Okay. What's weird about the word new? What's weird about the word over? Let's just stick with verse 8. Verse 8 is one of the most important verses in the whole Torah. That's the way it's understood by the... Yeah. There's a lot going on in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 words. So arose. How do you become Pharaoh? How do you become king of Egypt? It should be like, and then little boy Pharaoh who was born to the king. It doesn't... Okay, first of all, does it say the old king died? It should be like, and the old king was old, and he died, and his son took over. Yeah. It's a coup d'etat. And even the Hebrew even is reflected well in the English. So even if you don't know Hebrew, arose. What's another word for a coup is in English?
Uprising.
It's an uprising. And that is reflected well in the Hebrew too.
Right.
So that you don't need to know Hebrew to really get this. A new, like, and so the word new is weird. It should be the sun. That's not exactly new.
Right,
so
right.
What make Hadash new? A new king arose? Like, there's an uprising. And then even the word over. Do you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. Over is...
Not among.
Not among, not from.
He took over.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's true. I mean, the al in Hebrew, upon, usually has that sense of upon, like on top of. Al is, like, you know, you've got them under your feet. And so... Okay, well, you guys got the whole thing. That was my whole thing on that. But, like, this changes everything. This is not the natural successor of the king. This is an uprising. It's some new guy. We don't know his name. And he didn't know Joseph. Okay, go ahead.
You know, to know somebody is to recognize them. He didn't recognize Joseph. He didn't want to.
Actually, I have a better word for that. I have a word. I mean, because I agree. Yes, you got it. The English word acknowledge has the word know in it, and the word yada can be used that way. So what if you translate it, who did not acknowledge, which has the word know, acknowing, he doesn't, which is, because it is a puzzle. How could he not, I mean, look, it said Joseph and all that generation died. So one possibility, and some, if you're a historian or an archaeologist, you could be like, I wonder if this is a situation where there really was an outside king, like, I don't know, from the southern part of Egypt. You know, there are cases where you have successions in Egyptian history where you have, like, you know, I don't know, Ubedatatan the first, Ubedatatan, there is no Ubedatatan, but let's just say Ubedatatan the first, the second, the third, fourth, and then suddenly you get, like, Own the first. And then, you know, Egyptologists say, where did this Own the first come from? Maybe they're from, like, the Alexandrian part, and they, you know, it was almost like a Confederate took over the Union or something. Like, anyway, so one possibility is... they're not in that part of Egypt, and there's some kind of, there's something going on in Egyptian national history, and an outsider comes in who literally didn't know him, or what may be, and so that's one possibility, and he comes in, it's like, now that we've taken over, we've won a civil war, right? They can be like, so it's a different faction from a different part of Egypt, and they come in, and they're like, now we've taken over, there are all these Hebrews running around. How'd they get here? And then it's like, well, there was a guy named Joseph, and he was really great, and there were the shepherds, and we're the farmers, and it's beautiful. And he's like, that's interesting, because they are numerous. They seem to be fertile and prolific. I'll leave that open, because that goes to the next step. Or what you just said, which is that it's an inside job, and it's a coup from within, and he refuses... Now that Joseph is dead, he refuses to acknowledge the contributions of the Hebrews.
Sounds really recent.
There's nothing new under this. And Shane, are you holding up your hand or no? Okay, no, because I know you're... No, there's nothing new under the sun. So look at the next line. And he said to his people, And so Vemra Elmo, Hine. So this is like a big, like, behold, like, look. So Am B'nei Yisrael. This is very interesting because if you, like, Naomi, I mean, if you, you know, and you're like, when you study the Hebrew, he doesn't just say B'nei Yisrael, Israelites. He says Am B'nei Yisrael, the nation of Israelites. Now, it's very interesting because are we a nation? Not yet.
People.
Well said. You nailed it. Not yet.
The people.
But how do they translate into, let us, yeah. I'm just saying, you can say Israelite people. First of all, you could say the Hebrews. And secondly, you can also say B'nai Israel, which I hate when it's translated the sons of Israel. My dad used to just go, my dad goes crazy over that. B'nai Israel means Israelites. It's like if we always said the sons of America. B'nai Israel means, it's American, so it's Israelites. So he could say Israelites or Hebrews, and he says, Am B'nai Israel, which is not an expression you see very much. It's a highly rhetorical flourish. So it's significant. He'd just be like, it's not the Mexican Americans. It's the Mexican nation living among us. I mean, it's significant. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
It's not an ethnic people. It is a nationality. It's a nation. It's not Egyptian nation. I mean, it's part of. So you get what I'm saying. It is nationalism. It's exact. Harold, I'm just supporting your point, which is. It seems to be going nationalistic. Who really is an Egyptian? Who really belongs here? Who belongs here? Now, it's one thing to say, do Mexicans really belong here? It's a different thing to say, we have Mexican nationals among us. Suddenly I'm like, I didn't know we had Mexican nationals among us. He's like, we have B'nai Yisrael, a very strange expression that we don't see very often anywhere else that seems a little... He's a fear monger. And then it says, Rav Atzum Mimenu, which means they are, the Mi and Mimenu means than us. So that means Rav means, it means many. They are more numerous than us, and the Atzum, they are more powerful than us. Like, so I know we don't have a chance against these Mexicans.
They outnumber
us. Yeah. Okay, now listen to the next line. Hava nidchachmalo pen yirbe v'haya ki tikrena milchama v'nosef gam hu al soneinenu v'nilcham banu v'ala min ha'aretz. Now that is a long line, and it is basically one sentence that is an entire speech, and it's incredible. Hava, we've got to do something. Hava Nagila means we got to dance. I'm sorry to be, but you know Hava Nagila. Like, so when you know you're at my when I'm at my wedding and I'm like, I'm not going up on the chair, they're like, Hava Nagila. Like, you're going whether you like it or not. Like, we got to do something. So Hava means got to do something. So Hava, we're going to do something. We got to do something. We got to get wiser. So Nit Chakma means, how they say, deal shrewdly. Yeah. But We've got to enwisen ourselves. We got to get smart here. And I'm not trying to just push a Trumpian, anti-Trumpian, whatever. I'm trying to do the Hebrew, which is Hava means got to do something. Got to do it now. Hava means we got to get smart here. So lo about it. So we got to enwisen ourselves about this nation. It's not them. It's the nation. So the low is singular. So it's like, we got to figure something out about them. We got to get wise about this nation. That's about this. Pen, because if we don't, or lest, yerbe, they're just going to get bigger. They're going to just increase in their numbers. V'haya, and should it happen, tikrena milchama, that a war with Egypt from one happens, V'nosaf gamhu, they will surely ally with our enemies. V'nilcham banu v'ala min ha'aretz, in fighting against us, v'ala min ha'aretz. Now, I want to point out a significant thing about Allah, which is like Aliyah going up. Where do we come from? We come from Canaan. They know that, right? From Egypt. That's the one border with Egypt that's unprotected. It's only protected by the Red Sea, by the Suez Canal, or whatever you call it now, right? And so what going up is a military term, which is that the one territorial weakness of Egypt is the influx of migrants and enemies from their border with the Sinai, with Israel. And that's true. Egypt used to have wars with, later than this, Egypt used to have wars with the Babylonians, and it's a very hard, the Babylonians would come through Canaan, through the Sinai, and attack Egypt. So I just want to point out that, they're saying that, so very quickly, we got to do something. We got to get smart about this nation living among us, because if we don't, they're just going to get bigger, and if there ever Egypt should have a war with an enemy, they're going to lead people, they're going to join with our enemies because they know the way from Canaan that's relatively unprotected, and they're going to show them exactly how to infiltrate our border, our least protected border, because that's where they came through to migrate here in the first place. Right, and the problem is that somehow the shepherd people who live here, suddenly the problem is that, am I allowed to say, like, they're terrorists. I mean, it doesn't matter that they love being here. It doesn't matter that they've been amazing citizens. They're really not part of our nation, and clearly they're plotting.
They're anti-Egyptian.
They're plotting. Like, they're plotting to let our enemies in through our borders anytime.
And they live.
We gotta build a wall. And after all, they know how to get in here. They got in here. And so now, let's go back to. Well, anyway, comments. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to. Yeah, I think something did come up with when they're moving there. Or like, you know, one of the issues was, is there enough land? And the Pharaoh's like, yeah, they can live in Goshen. People don't like living in the hill country anyway, and they're shepherds. And it was taboo in Egypt to touch animals. And remember, they needed people to, like, breed the cattle. And I love the old Pharaoh. The Pharaoh's like, there's something called symbiosis. The old Pharaoh was with God. You know, I think one word for God is symbiosis. It's like, everyone's saying there's not enough land and we can't do it and we can't handle these immigrants. Wait a second. Our people don't like doing this job anyway. Because if you have to touch an animal in ancient Egypt, you are considered to be a vulgar, low-level person. Like the person who is a migrant worker and, you know, if I...
Manual laborer.
No, you know what I mean? Yeah.
And farming.
Do I really want Marav to bring home and say, look, well, you know, look who's coming to dinner. Look who's coming to dinner. As I met this guy, you're going to love him. He's a migrant worker who picked strawberries and didn't go to college. You know, I'm going to be like, I'm supposed to be a good liberal. You know, like what I'm saying is that taboo in Egypt was that the second you said you worked with animals, you were considered dirty, uneducated, uncivilized, uncultured, uncouth, everything. And so the new pharaoh was like, this is great. These people, and Joseph's like, my people work with animals. They have no problem with it. Great. They can have the animal area and we'll be fine. He's a good. And these guys are like, forget, these guys aren't about animals. Who are these Hebrews? They are just here to join with our enemies and subvert us. They don't have our best interests at heart. They're a nation living among us and they breed too fast. And and it's just interesting. And so I know we have to, in fighting against this and rising from the ground, going to the rabbis, why would anyone say this? And this is medieval, like this is ancient stuff, the biblical commentaries. Why would any new pharaoh do this? And the answer is because they're incredibly insecure in their power. So the problem is you got a guy, there's an uprising, he takes over. Do you think the people are with him? People are going to be like, who's the guy who's the new pharaoh? Right? Whether they're an outsider in Egypt, you know what I mean? They came from a different city and are now taking over Pitom and Ramses, or whether they are an advisor, or whether they're just someone. So this new guy took over, and this is his first speech. What do insecure people who just did a coup d'etat do? So this is an extraordinary thing that in our own Torah and in our own commentaries, they're like, there's a really easy formula for people who try to take over country non-legally, right? Which is the first speech you give is, I can solve all of your problems, by identifying, by having a new nationalism, what it means to be American, what it means to be Egyptian, and I can show you the people who live among us who are causing our problems. And mm-hmm. it is crazy. I once gave a sermon here on Yom HaShoah that, you know, very few people came to, which is that, I mean, this is just exactly what happened in Nazi Germany. You know, Hitler burned down the Congress building, the parliament building, the Reichstag. And then he was considered a weirdo and a nuisance. Some people liked him because they thought he would shake up Germany. Germany was in terrible depression from World War I. And they were the laughingstock of the world. They were broke. Money was becoming worthless. Inflation was 1,000%. And this crazy guy was sort of giving these speeches and saying, I can restore Germany to its old luster. Right. And his rallies were violent. They were controlled by a group called the Brown Shirts. His group was called the Brown Shirts. And then he called themselves the National Socialists. But they were the Brown Shirts, and they were violent. He got them worked up. Hitler, if you read Mein Kampf, he actually says the way he did his rallies is you never deal with anything intellectual or rational. You always just play on the emotions. And if anyone ever challenges you and says, wait a second, but that doesn't make sense, you never, he wrote this in Mein Kampf, I was going to read it on Yom Kippur. You never respond to the argument. What you do is you pick some emotional issue that gets your supporters fired up. So, because Hitler's like, the controlling a crowd is about emotions, and you paint a picture of what it used to be like, and then it can be that way again. And then you blame someone for why it's not that way. So that's Mein Kampf. That is verse 10. And then he burned down the Reichstag. He burned down the Congress building. And he gave a speech. And everyone knew he did it. And he gave a speech in which he said, the Jews did it. And the communists did it. And our enemies did it. And we need to declare martial law and put me in charge so that I can deal with our enemies, because I'm the only one tough enough who's going to have the bravery to do it. Oh, and it happened. This happened recently I'm not a big fan of Vladimir Putin. So in case you don't know, and I know I'm late and someone's going to come get me, which is this. If you stream or anything like that, go to PBS's website and go to the Frontline documentary that was made this past year on Vladimir Putin and watch it. So what Putin did was, Putin was a relatively minor guy who did work his way up through corruption to be head of the KGB. And remember that, Homus? I'm coming out. But before we just... I'll be right there. So one thing's happened is, after the World Trade Center came down, something started happening in the Soviet Union, which is residential skyscrapers started being bombed and blown up. And a panic wave went through Russia. Who's blowing up these apartment buildings with people in them? Because, very similar, skyscrapers. And Putin gave a speech that the leadership of the Communist Party was not being tough enough, and he had evidence that it was Chechen rebels, and that he needed to be, no one had the guts to go back into Chechnya and do what really needed to be done, which is really ugly stuff. Only he did. And he maneuvered himself through popular opinion, and he was made head of the Communist Party, and he took over Russia. And if you watch the front line, it'll show you that all intelligence officials around the world agree that one of the bombs didn't go off that was set. And it was captured by police. And it was a KGB bomb. And not only that, they had witnesses, because they weren't blown up, who saw the two people planted, and they were well-known KGB officers in the town. Everybody knows in Russia that Putin was blowing up his own people in order to blame it on his enemies. And then he did go into Chechnya, a brutal war of raping and pillaging and killing women and children. All of it falsely based on the idea that Chechen terrorists had bombed those buildings. And we all know he did. Every journalist and every person in Russia who ever was exploring it or publishing it, they all died in car accidents or sudden heart attacks. And all of this is in, like, on PBS. And so, like, this playbook is a well-known playbook, which is, I've got to be in charge because we got enemies living among us. And I'm the only one who's got the guts to do something about them.